Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you. Hey everybody, just one more show this week. I'm Johnny Rowland, this is the Damage Report, and we're gonna get you through it. We've got Brett Ehrlich in studio, which is important for a couple of different reasons. One, he has a new episode of his show, Happy Half Hour, coming out today, a little bit later on. Tell the people about it, Brett.
5 o'clock p.m., I just ate a biscuit.
We're eating biscuits, that's what we do on Fridays.
I was gonna try not to say anything, but I also don't have water, it's my bad. I was late to the studio. Anyways, today on the Happy Half Hour, Malcolm Fleschner is our guest, and we drink what was called the best new kind of alcohol in the world. It's, you can only buy it two places in America, but we have some spicy. It's called F Trump and His Stupid Effing Wall is the name of the liquor. Check it out. It's amazing. It's 5 p.m. Yes. It'll be available.
Awesome. And the other reason it's important that we have Brett in studio is we're going to be closing out this week, which has been another one of the rough ones, kind of. We're going to be closing it out in the style of Happy Half Hour, not with, you know, alcohol, but I have some very good news. This is not news, it's not timely, but I was doing research unrelated to this and discovered something really good that's been going on in the background of our society for a couple of decades. And it surprised me, it surprised a couple of the people I brought it up to. So we're gonna close out the show with some good news, so look forward to that. Before that, bad news. So we're gonna be starting off with, actually this is pretty good. The Democrats, they have a new House majority. What are they gonna do with it? Well, they've announced the plans for their first big bill. We're gonna be breaking that down. A little bit later on in the show, Ken Klippenstein is going to be joining us from TYT Investigates. He's been doing research into the manufacture of the tear gas that's being used at the border, and he's found out some shady stuff involving that company. We'll be talking about that. And Donald Trump, is he purposefully or just accidentally benefiting from fragile masculinity in the United States? We have some research indicating how men who are a little bit insecure about themselves as men might find Trump to be more appealing and why. Okay, before that, the Democratic bill. So let's start off with that. House Democrats will soon take over control of the House, and we have been wondering here at the Damage Report, what are they actually going to do with their new majority? And well, they've announced a plan for their first big bill. It covers multiple areas. Brett's smiling for some reason, I'm not entirely sure why.
No, it's a great bill. It's a fantastic bill.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Why don't we go through a few different components of it? But apparently they want to come out of the gate swinging, covering multiple different areas that were actually on our wish list. We did a little video of the things we'd like to see them do. Some of it's in here. So the first area is on campaign finance, and they have a couple different planks in there. The first, I just want to focus on this briefly. So this has to do with public financing of campaigns. The federal government would provide a voluntary 6-to-1 match for candidates for president and Congress, which means for every dollar a candidate raises from small donations, they would be given $6. That's pretty significant, I think,
yes,
actually. So we have seen some candidates, you can come back to us for a little bit, we'll go back to that in just a second. So if you're not taking corporate PAC money, if you're not taking corporate money, if you are just trying to get as many small dollar donations as possible, we've seen that in some candidacies like Beto O'Rourke, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and others, getting $6 for every dollar you raise, that might make it far more feasible for a number of, maybe not presidential candidates, but for Congress, it might actually work.
It's a weird thing to me, though, because for every dollar you raise from a person who voluntarily gave it to you, you get $6 from people who did not voluntarily give it to you, because
yes,
it is tax money. Well, and that is so weird. And I understand the enormous pressure. Like, I understand that some kind of public financing for campaigns is something that is more attractive generally, kind of a candidate platform agnostic approach, mm-hmm, to giving out money and making sure that people, when they run their ads, do not owe money to any, you know, disproportionately representative giant entity.
Mm-hmm.
But it is super weird to me still to say, all right, here's some taxpayer money, mm-hmm, to run your ad, person who isn't in government yet, mm-hmm, and just wants to be in government.
Yeah.
Here's a taste of how you get taxpayer dollars.
Yeah.
That's weird to me. I think it's a half measure. It's better than the current measure, but I still feel like the constitutional amendment to get money out of politics.
Yes. Oh, well, yes, but that constitutes would involve public financing of campaigns. The goal is not there will never be any money. I mean, generally, I think the goal is that there will be much less spent. Yeah. But there's always going to be some financing. And the criticism you make, I think, makes perfect sense, although I'm going to attack it in many different ways.
No, I get it.
But any public financing system is going to work that way. What you're paying for, what I would say, and look, right now you can voluntarily check to give like $3 to the public financing, I think, on your taxes. So there would be something like that. What you are paying for is not so that, like, you know, Joe Williams can run an ad, it's so that corporations don't have as much control over politics effectively. And in some particular cases, that might seem weird because some of the candidates might be horrendous, but they can only be as horrendous as people are willing to support them. Because if they can't actually get people to donate real money, then they're not actually going to be able to benefit from this very much.
Right, but I am financing someone who it depends. That could kind of eat its tail. But essentially, I'm financing the opponent of the person I gave money to.
Yes. So look, very brief aside, I was in student government in college and I was on the board.
There's a shocker.
Yeah. So I'm going to say, I was on the board that had to, okay, student groups would come and say, we want this amount of money to do this.
The Appropriations Committee.
The Appropriations Committee. I don't know if we called it that, but yes. And sometimes it was to bring speakers onto the campus. And there is no speaker that everybody likes. And there's no group that everybody benefits from. I mean, why should the kayaking club get $10,000 for new kayaks if 98% of the campus, or 99%, will never kayak? Okay, that's just a philosophical thing, but we have major problems right now that are not philosophical.
We encountered some appropriations issues when I was the president of the student body.
Mm-hmm. Were you the president of the student body?
Yeah.
You were?
Is that ever in doubt? I was a president. Just to give you an idea of what peaking early means, I was president of student body and homecoming king. And it's all downhill since then.
Yeah. Yeah, you had a good run.
Run. Fantastic run. Wouldn't trade it for the world.
President of the student body, homecoming king, are effectively your four touchdowns at a single game.
Yeah, yep. Uh-huh. I threw the touchdown pass. No, I was seventh in league in golf. Mm-hmm. The wins just keep piling up.
This is already going downhill.
Just to give you an idea of how precipitous the decline is after homecoming king, you can't beat it. Anyway, so back to things that materially affect people's lives.
Okay, yes, let's move on to other areas. Because of course, the public financing by itself, that can't be the only thing. It has to exist in a system. And other parts of this system include passing the Disclose Act, which would require super PACs and dark money political organizations to make their donors public. They should be able to pass that in 5 minutes. There should be no Republicans that are like, yes, we need more hidden large sums of money affecting our politics.
This forces people to say exactly what you said. Mm-hmm. This forces the Senate Republicans to say no.
Yeah. And look, that's basically all of this.
That's
really
why it is.
But we'll get to that when we're wrapping up. Also, passing the Honest Ads Act, which would require Facebook and Twitter to disclose the source and amount of money of political ads on their platforms. I don't know what that could be in reference to. But anyway, Facebook has some issues, so they're going to try to rein it in. The most important one is the one that's put first, that is the public financing. And there's other components as well. This is just a brief summary. We don't know exactly what the final text will actually be. Other areas in ethics, requiring the president to disclose his or her tax returns. That's a nice little wink and a nod.
It's pretty ambiguous, though. I mean, I'm not sure.
That could be about anything.
It's about.
They could be targeting any president that we have right now.
Potentially presidents of various student bodies, of which I was one.
Yes. You want to see my tax returns? Okay, additionally, stopping members of Congress from using taxpayer money to settle sexual harassment cases or buy first-class plane tickets. Yeah, that'd be great. Look, Congress
it's just
has had
so
a number
ludicrous that
it's required
has to be,
but it does have to be said.
Yes.
Blake Fahrenthold and others, like, they spent tons of taxpayer money. Like, if you don't like funding a political ad of a person, how much less do you like funding them getting off for sexual assault?
Don't say getting off in sexual assault.
You know what I
together.
Mean. Okay, America, you know. Additionally, giving the Office of Government Ethics the power to do more oversight and enforcement and put in stricter lobbying registration requirements. We might say that doesn't go far enough, but anything that tamps down a little bit of the out of control lobbying in Congress, I think, is a good thing. And overall, as well as create a new ethical code for the U.S. Supreme Court, ensuring all blanches, blah, 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 blah. I don't know exactly what they mean.
I don't even know what that means.
I don't know what that means. So hopefully they'll give more details.
That's the most dangerous aspect of various laws.
Yeah. Basically, you don't have rights anymore.
I say ethical, U.S. Supreme Court, every branch sounds right. That
it
I
does.
Want ethics,
yeah, I don't know what that means.
But I don't know what it means.
But this section overall, it looks like for the next 2 years, they're going to be doing two things. They're going to be trying to get the Republicans to vote against things that are wildly popular, and they're going to try to put the focus on corruption. That is, I think, a very salient issue and one that it's all over the place. Things like the sexual harassment, the travel and stuff like that, as well as lobbying. So corruption, gigantic issue. People really do care about that. If you run on it, you can win on it. And so it looks like they're going to be trying to put as much pressure on the Republicans in that area as possible.
And that's all they can really do because
yes.
You have, you know, it's hard enough when you only have, if you had 55 senators on mm-hmm. your side, but if you have less than 50,
yeah.
It's a real uphill battle.
Yeah, in 2 years, you're going to hear, why didn't they pass so-and-so? Well, because they have House. They don't have the Senate, and Trump wouldn't sign it. So they can. It makes sense to do the bills. It makes sense to pass them in the House, but not because they will then become law. That's just not the way it works, unfortunately. Another area, though, voting rights, very important. They want to create a new national automatic voter registration that asks voters to opt out rather than opt in, ensuring more people will be signed up to vote. It also encourages more early voting and online voting. So that I don't know why that is not the system right now. Imagine the people that opt out. That's an interesting thing, but I guess you can. The Republicans will vote against this and it will look terrible for them. So that's a good move by the Democrats as well. They want to restore the Voting Rights Act and prohibit voter roll purging. This election, I think, has been a great demonstration of how needed that is. I mean, there has been so much gerrymandering, voter purging, voter suppression, especially motivated by clear racism historically and in this past midterm. So hopefully that will get passed as well.
Mm-hmm. And just pure self-interest, there are two particular races where secretaries of state did not recuse themselves in their gubernatorial or senatorial bids or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And I cannot fathom how that is not enshrined in some ethical code,
yeah.
Because there is no even semblance of appearance of propriety.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even if you had them recuse themselves, they would still be having their own races overseen by people they themselves put into office.
Yeah.
But it would be that one step back, that one step being removed, that would just clear everything up so much more.
It seems ludicrous.
It sounds like something that it's the first thing you hear before finally you discover that the margin of victory was 99% to 1.
Yeah, yeah.
And
hopefully they will accomplish that. Now, again, this is just an overview. We have to see.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
What's in the final bill, we will be reporting on that when it finally comes. But overall, for a first bill, and this will be House Bill 1 or House Resolution 1, looks like they're moving in the right direction. This is at least the areas we want them to work in, if not exactly as far as we might want them to go. With that said, we're going to take a first break. When we come back, lots more for you. Welcome everyone to the Friday edition of the Damage Report. Johnny Rolla, Brett Earth is in studio as well. So much to get to, let's jump back into it. As we are filming this right now, the G20 summit is going on and Trump is actually having some of his meetings. I just want to talk briefly about one of the quotes from one of them. Side note, he apparently is going to, I saw a tweet, he's going to have an impromptu meeting with Vladimir Putin after all. So first of all, that's funny, the whole cancel it and then do it anyway. Second of all, if it's planned, it's not impromptu. That's in the definition of impromptu, so that's weird. But it literally said an impromptu meeting will be had. Okay. And so Philip Rucker tweeted this out. I love this. Classic. Japanese PM Abe tells Trump, I would like to congratulate you on your historic victory in the midterm elections in the United States. And there's, I guess, technically two ways to read that.
I think.
One is that, does he not know what happened?
No.
And the other is, no, he knows what happened.
Shinzo Abe knows exactly what happened. You need to only see like one or two wry smiles from Shins to see that he's like, way to go, bud.
Yeah.
You had such a huge
You did victory. Great, big guy.
Yeah.
You did great. He, again, just like, so yesterday I saw a screenshot from Tucker Carlson. And it was, he had a lower third, and it was Mueller probe going after elderly men. And I thought, that's a guy that knows his demographic.
Mm-hmm.
Just say, protect elderly men, and your elderly men who watch the show will like you. Shinzo Abe, he knows Trump. Mm-hmm. And he knows that Trump wants to be told that he's a winner no matter what. Second of all, funny little video, I guess. I was going through Twitter and saw this little video from the G20 summit. Let's play this for you. Enthusiastically greeting Mohammed bin Salman, the leader, the crown prince of Saudi Arabia.
That was, I mean, there.
Just a big, oh, I don't even, what do you even call, that was a, it's not a high five and it's not a handshake. It's just like a bro greeting, right?
It is.
Is that fair to say that's a bro greeting?
I'll tell you exactly what this is. This is remembering that night in Doha.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it is.
Oh,
this is the reunion after like, oh my God, I can't believe we got so many people upside down.
Yeah.
I don't know how that works. It's like, oh, there was a lot of honey that night, wasn't there?
Oh my God.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
For those of you who aren't listening to the podcast and not seeing it, basically it is two guys who know they want to make some kind of sound with their hands.
Yes.
But they didn't really say, is it a side five? Is it a high five?
It's a side five. That's what it is.
No. It's both of them thinking it's a high five halfway through kind of. No, because it is.
It's too smooth.
It's a thumb grab.
They nailed it.
It's the thumb grab. It's the hand up thumb grab where you go in and you grab around the guy's thumb and keep it together.
Okay, we've dissected enough. Let's talk about the significance though. I apologize for the podcast where you couldn't see it, but it was some sort of crazy. Look. It's Vladimir Putin, Mohammed bin Salman. Regardless, they're leaders, I guess, and they've both been awful people for a long time, so I guess they're immune to it. But like Vladimir Putin knows what MBS is in the news for. Like I just imagine, like there's a lot of tweets to this effect, but like, hey, nice bone saw in there. Hey, good use of poison yourself. Like these are both guys that viciously track down and murder their political opponents. So with Vladimir Putin, he literally kills the people that would run against him. And if you're a journalist investigating him or corruption in Russia, they kill you. They just murder you. Whether you're in the US, or sorry, whether you're in Russia or you're abroad, they will track you down. They'll put some polonium in you or they'll put some poison in you. They'll use nerve toxins or whatever, and they will kill you. Mohammed bin Salman, he just took a bunch of the people that could theoretically pose a political challenge to him, and he put them all in a hotel somewhere, just kidnapped them all. And then journalists, you know, Jamal Khashoggi, just track him down, kill him, and chop up their body. Ha ha ha. Isn't it great to be a despot in 2018?
And I don't think it's explicit. It might be, but that is the kind of high five that Trump wants to have every day of his life.
Yeah.
He wants to have the monarch slash oligarch high five, we're nailing it, everything's fantastic.
That is apparently the case. We'll see, maybe he'll have, but he doesn't do the smooth one, he does the big pull. Anyway, let's turn to important news. Overall bad information on life expectancy in the US, it declined again in 2017, and partially due to bad results for health insurance for kids and things like that. The health insurance rate for children actually went down for the first time in over a decade. This data continued the longest sustained decline in expected lifespan at birth in a century. A performance not seen, you have to go way back, 1915 through 1918. And for context, that period included World War I and a flu pandemic that killed 675,000 people in the US and 50 million worldwide. Man, you know, I've heard that many times, but it doesn't really sink in that was really bad. So to finally.
You heard it here first, folks. World War One death toll, really
No,
bad.
I was talking about the flu pandemic, actually.
Sorry, but
I
mean, also, flu, yeah.
Like, how often we, that was a historically bad outbreak of disease.
Yes.
And it took until today for us to once again reach the overall decline in a 4-year period of life expectancy. And let's talk about how that actually plays out for you and the people around you. Overall, Americans could expect to live 78.6 years at birth in 2017, down a tenth of a year from 2016. Men are at 76.1 years, down a tenth. Women was unchanged, that was 81.1. So women get, it looks like about 5 years more than men. And free of the men, perhaps, that they're with. And let's talk about some of the reasons that this has declined. It's not everything is getting worse, it's some specific things are getting worse. If we bring up this chart, you're gonna see the overall rates of drug overdose deaths and suicide. And you're seeing suicide numbers between 2000 and last year rising quite a bit there. Although interestingly, the male suicide death rate is way higher. It's almost 4 times higher than the female rate, both back in 2000 and recently, but rising precipitously. And you see also, I mean, even worse, the drug overdose rates in the last 18 to 20 years are rising like crazy. And you know, we've talked about that many times, why that is.
Yes, this is a crisis. It is terrible. And when America is compared to other countries in terms of life expectancy, other developed countries, we are at the bottom. Mm-hmm. This is based on 2015 results. We are beneath Chile.
Wow.
Other countries that we are following up are Greece. We are way down there. Japan, Switzerland, Australia, Spain, Iceland, Italy, Israel, France, Sweden. Those countries are at the top. Mm-hmm. And we are, I think we're like somewhere in like the 24th, 25th.
Number one, how many more years do they get than us?
They get
you said it was Japan?
Total. Japan, it's 80. I'm looking at a graph, so I don't know. Japan leads the world with an expectancy at 84 years.
Okay, so they get on average 6 years more than us.
Mm-hmm.
That's significant. And they get to live those 6 years in a pretty cool country.
18 of those countries have a life expectancy at least 3 years longer than the US. And that was before, that was in a 2015 report, which this says that this is a precipitous drop over
from last year.
From last year, so it even gets worse.
Yeah, so hopefully that's something we can reverse, but this is not going in the right direction. And I wanna turn to one other related area. We know that life expectancy is going down in the US, but it's not actually going down for everyone. It's not changing universally for all people. So let's bring up the next chart in the graphics. You're gonna see this life expectancy by income quartile. On the damage report, you could always expect to see graphs breaking things down by quartile. So what you have there is, what does income inequality have to do with life expectancy? And it's actually gigantic. If you are one of the poorest Americans versus one of not even like the top 1%, we're talking about people that make a quarter million. That's a lot of people. That's, well, a quartile, I guess. You're talking about a difference a few years back of something like 10 years difference in how long on average you will live. That is larger than the difference between men and women. Obviously, there's racial differences as well. But this income difference is, I believe, possibly the largest. And it's tied in with a lot of other things. If you don't have much money, you're not gonna get healthcare that you need. You're gonna eat food that's not gonna sustain your body as much. But 10 years, that is a huge difference in the overall life satisfaction and length.
And there is one solution that I think would help bring this into a more even distribution, and that is poor people just need to get richer.
I think
just find a way on your own.
I don't know for sure, but we should try it.
Let's try that.
Let's try it.
I wonder if poor people have tried getting richer.
Yeah.
I wonder if they've done that, if they've really applied themselves. I also just read a bunch of Ayn Rand before coming on the show.
Did you?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
so
well, I think
you could solve it by just getting richer.
I appreciate your advice, Stuart Varney.
All the countries with higher life expectancies than us have some kind of either universal healthcare system or at least a system that negotiates drug prices on behalf of the government that ensures that the drug prices aren't completely unattainable.
One of the things that would help to unexacerbate this income inequality difference on life expectancy.
Yeah, because this is what happens when there is a monetary impediment to you getting the kind of care that someone else gets who doesn't have that impediment. I mean, you go hospital. Some hospitals, you spend $25,000 extra dollars every year and you go to the front of the line. That's how it works. That's literally how it works.
Mm-hmm.
You get designer healthcare just for paying, I think it's $24,000 or $12,000 extra a year.
And but, you know, for many people, that's more than their income, actually. Yeah. Let's talk about just one more example super fast, just the worst comparison here. Men who are amongst the top 1% lived 15 years longer than men at the bottom 1%. 15 years. You know, you always hear like, you know, back in caveman times, they only lived to like 25 or 30. Like, we have that sort of stark difference. And we allow it. So look, when we talk about income inequality, Fox News wants you to think that that's a question of how nice of a TV do you have. It is not a question of how nice of a TV do you have. It's a question of how long, how high quality of a life do you have. And thankfully, these numbers show how significant that is. We're gonna take a short break. When we come back, fragile masculinity. Men who are concerned about whether they measure up as men. What do they think about Donald Trump? We'll break that down after this. Welcome back, everyone. More to talk about. Like I said in the intro, a little bit later on, actually in the next block, Ken Klippenstein of TYT Investigates is gonna be joining us. He's been doing research into one of the manufacturers of the tear gas that was recently used to gas women and children at the border. He'll be talking to us about that. And also, an interesting politician that the CEO of that company supports. We're gonna talk about that and the implications. But first, fragile masculinity. Donald Trump loves to present himself as an alpha man, and literally every conservative man in America believes that they are an alpha, because that's how alphas work. But they do all think it. But what's interesting is that research has been done into exactly what sort of men were more likely to support Donald Trump in his bid for the presidency, and it's very fascinating. Overall, I just wanna read part of like the conclusions of the report. They said our research suggests that Trump is not necessarily attracting male supporters who are as confidently masculine as the president presents himself to be. Instead, Trump appears to appeal more to men who are secretly insecure about their manhood. We call this the fragile masculinity hypothesis. Let's talk about how they looked into that. They did a search for Google searches in different parts of the country for things that seem to indicate a little bit of concern about masculinity. So let's bring up this map. You're gonna see a sort of chart of the country. And they looked for which media markets were searching for hair loss, Viagra, steroids, testosterone, how to get girls, penis enlargement, basically any issue with your dong. So that was not evenly spread across the whole country. It actually sort of clustered in certain areas. And so here is what they found. Support for Donald Trump in the 2016 election was higher in areas that had more searches for topics such as erectile dysfunction. Moreover, this relationship persisted after accounting for demographic attributes in media markets, such as education levels, racial composition, as well as searches for topics unrelated to fragile masculinity, such as breast augmentation and menopause. So to the extent that they could, they did try to control for different things. And look, this is a very unique sort of research, but fascinating findings.
Here's the thing.
What?
I think I would like to see the breakdown of the age of a supporter of Trump versus the age of a supporter of other people, because things like losing your hair and specifically your penis shrinking are things that affect older people. I speak from experience because I've been to gyms and like the old men love standing out naked all the time and showing you what has happened to their shriveled, their tinier penis over time. And I fear for my future because it seems like
it's like looking into a dark, wrinkly mirror.
Because the testicles go down and the penis, it seems like some kind
10 of 10 times as much detail as we need.
It seems like this kind of maneuver.
Okay,
where
this is about politics. Okay, you know? So look, I'm gonna continue. So you might think maybe this is just about Republican versus liberal or whatever, and they tend to live in certain areas, but no, not the case. Fragile masculinity was not associated with support for Mitt Romney in 2012 or support for John McCain in 2008, suggesting that the correlation of fragile masculinity and voting in presidential elections was distinctively stronger in 2016, which could be a Trump thing or it could be a trend thing. It could be, and look, with the alt-right and the Proud Boys and all of this, men are in a bad way, not in terms of their rights and stuff like that, the sort of thing that the men's rights guys try to make you think is a problem, but there is a lot of insecurity amongst men. And that leads to a lot of acting out and pretending to be an alpha man and things like that. And that could theoretically have a political effect.
Right, well, I think Trump wants to appeal to the ones who feel like no one has been appealing to them. And it is such like a basic thing because I see Trump, which is just like this empty symbol of 80s extravagance, and it's the word that somehow made it into pop culture as some as gold covered, but you know, beneath that gold there is so so little substance. It's just like a thin layer around the outside, but that's all it takes. He is a media sensation. He is not a real estate oligarch, he necessarily, compared to other more successful businesses. He is not that actual figure. He is that very easily identifiable symbol of that kind of lifestyle. And he has a very skilled, he's very skilled in appealing to people who are looking for that, and it's enough.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, I just, I think.
I love, though, seeing like a headline that's like most of his supporters have erectile dysfunction.
That's not what they're saying.
Sorry, your junk doesn't work.
Your junk doesn't work. That's not
you're out of work. Your junk doesn't
no,
work.
No, but your new male role models actually don't work. And you know, there's a lot of people trying to sell you like courses and books and things like that. These guys suck. They don't understand women. Women hate them and their philosophies. There needs to be something better. Men have an issue. And it needs to be dealt with. These guys that are trying to profit from it do not actually know how to fix this problem.
They're appealing to someone who is all talk about the situation because that's the easiest thing to do. Is the like Trump is always looking for the easiest thing to say to get out of claiming responsibility for anything. And that is the fragile masculinity. The most fragile males are the ones who lash out at women because they think it's their fault and they refuse to acknowledge their own shortcomings. And this is all Trump says. It's not me. They're treating me unfairly. They're treating you unfairly. They're treating everybody unfairly without actually going to the root causes of all of this, which frequently go back to the individual, especially. That makes it extremely hypocritical because the individual advocacy inherent in capitalism. It's like, but it isn't your fault.
Yeah.
I mean, screw those brown people because they're not working. They're taking your jobs. You don't have to do anything.
Yeah. And it's the same thing applied to different outgroups.
It's a great sales pitch, and it seems to be working with a specific group of people.
Yeah, and the issue is that it won't get you a job and it won't get you laid, unfortunately. But they'll discover that eventually. And then they'll be enraged, and some of them will go shoot up yoga studios in Florida, unfortunately. Okay, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, Ken Klippenstein, TYT Investigates, is going to be joining us. The tear gas situation in the U.S., even shadier than you would imagine after this. If you've been following the news, you know that our government decided recently to start gassing people at the border. Tear gas, which has been sort of talked about jokingly in the news on the right wing side. But it is a serious situation, and it leads one to wonder who is benefiting from this new use of this crowd control material. Joining us now to help break that down based on his reporting, Ken Klippenstein of TYT Investigates. Ken, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Always glad to have you here. And so I'm curious, this the manufacturer that made the tear gas used in this incident last weekend, you've tracked down who that is and you've done some research into their activities. Can you break down this company for us?
Yeah, so the company is called Safariland, and people always kind of frown when I use that word. It's a very strange name. If you look at the company biography, it literally goes back to, I think it was someone in maybe the 30s. Who would go on safaris with their wealthy father in Africa. So that's the name of the company. And I think it projects pretty, I think that's pretty, you know, fair name for it. It's kind of seems that if you go on the website, it has a lot of very enthusiastic looking law enforcement individuals, and they describe how they're saving lives all the time. And what they manufacture is what's called crowd control. That's kind of a euphemism for, you know, tear gas, various chemical agents they use to try to control crowds, batons, riot shields, that kind of thing. So if you sort of look at the website, they're talking about saving officers' lives, like law enforcement lives. They don't really have a whole lot to say about about the you know, the other people, the ordinary people.
And so this company actually, oddly enough, and the name sort of sticks out, has come up in the news a couple of other times. And so you identified in your piece, which is available at TYT.com, the connection to both the protests at Standing Rock and also the family separation issue earlier this year. Can you go through those with us?
Yeah, so they've been implicated in so many things. It's amazing that it hasn't been reported more, I thought, and that's why I wrote the story. So they had provided a lot of the tear gas that police used on Ferguson protesters at the time. People would go through the canisters and you could see the company's name on it. And then also at Standing Rock. You know, I should point out at Standing Rock, you know, one woman almost had to amputate her arm. Another person became permanently blind from being hit in the face with a tear gas canister. I mean, these things, you know, they call them non-lethals, but really a better word for it is less lethal. Maybe it kills less people than an actual bullet would. But that's not to say that it doesn't kill people. It kills people all the time. And in addition to that, it can, you know, seriously injure or maim people as it's done at these demonstrations. So I was kind of shocked when I found out that at the Tijuana border, they were finding the exact same munitions. Because, I mean, you know, there are many tear gas manufacturers. Why does this one keep coming up again and again?
And this one, apparently based on one of the charts that you show in your article, is it's not just, you know, still having its products bought by the government, but apparently it's making more and more money in the recent past.
That's what was most astonishing to me. The sales have just skyrocketed under the Trump administration. I mean, you can look at the subcontracts from the Defense Department that they've received. These are numbers in the tens of millions. And around 2017, it increases pretty dramatically. And then 2018, it just explodes. They just shattered all records in terms of subcontracts from the Defense Department. And what was interesting to me about that is why does DOD need this? Wouldn't you think it would be maybe local law enforcement or SWAT teams, that kind of thing? Presumably the National Guard is getting it. So I would think that that would be a cause for concern when we're seeing it used on women and children as we have on the border.
Exactly. And so as you mentioned, this is best described as less lethal, still dangerous. So I just want to quick check with you, based on your research, I've seen two descriptions of the effect of these crowd control chemicals. Trump said it's just a lesser form of tear gas, so perfectly fine, you can use it on kids. And a Fox News guest said that the pepper spray, you could spread it on your nachos. Can you confirm either of those two descriptions?
Well, you know, I like spicy food. I'm Latino. I like my, but even I don't think I do that. more seriously, children's bodies can't handle it. There's been, some good academic work on this. Surprisingly little. I'm surprised there's not more, given, you know, that we allow law enforcement to use these things. But children's lungs are just not, developed enough to be able to handle them. There was a good report on this by a reporter by the name of Paul Gottinger. You can look it up, and he just details how this can literally kill kids, you know, far easier than it could adults. And then, of course, these are carcinogens, so that's not safe in itself. Yeah. But, a bigger question is, do these sort of, resort to force, does that work? Or it seems to be sort of an open question in the criminological literature that I've seen, because, there's good evidence for that. You know, this can inflame tensions, in situations where maybe they're trying to disperse protesters and things. So it's not even clear to me that, even in its technically proper use, that it's a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. But it is economically good if you're selling it, especially in this current climate. And so I want to stay on money. One last topic. You've also found the owner and CEO is Warren Kanders of Safariland, has made some political donations that sort of stood out. Could you explain that for us?
Yeah, so he's a longtime Republican donor. He gives huge sums. I mean, if you were looking at the total, it's probably in the hundreds of thousands, maybe even the low millions. And these are direct contributions, to campaigns. And the caps are generally, lower than they are to like super PACs and things. So that's very significant. You know, it's a lot of money in the direct political contributions world. But what was interesting was there was basically one prominent exception, maybe a couple smaller ones, but the prominent exception was Cory Booker. I noticed that in 2014, I believe it was, he started giving pretty large contributions to him, and not just Kanders, but his wife as well. They also co-hosted a private fundraiser for Booker. And to my surprise, I look at Booker's Twitter and, he was condemning the tear gas use in Tijuana, which, I suppose is good, but the tear gas was the company that's giving him all this money and hosting private fundraisers for him. That struck me as a bit of a, inconsistency, to say the least.
Yeah, and interesting, I saw in your research that Hillary Clinton had actually apparently given back some of the money a few years back that had been provided by these people. So one of the reasons I want to talk about this is I think this is a great opportunity for Cory Booker to return that money and not accept your money from either Safariland or related industries. Hopefully he's paying attention.
Yeah, I asked his press secretary about it, and I've yet to hear back, but maybe we'll see something about it, because it did seem to generate quite a stir. And I was surprised by, people didn't seem happy about it. Even people that sort of, I saw people say, like, oh, I thought Booker was a nice guy. I can't believe that he would do something like that. And, maybe it was oversight, who knows? I mean, when there's a private fundraiser, that, it suggests a little more than just a contribution.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, he knows about it now and he hasn't responded.
Yeah, so we'll have to watch and see. Still, Ken Klippenstein, thank you so much for joining us, as always.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Thank you. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, ending the week on some good news. It has to do with the human body, human health outcomes. We've apparently been making some progress in one particular area, and I will break that down after this. Welcome back to the show. Just minutes remaining. We only have this last segment for the week, so why not do things the happy half hour way? Have a little bit of good news to close out the show.
Get drunk.
We're going to get drunk after we eat our biscuits. Okay, good news for you. I was doing some research on the story that we talked about earlier. Earlier we were talking about life expectancy going down. That's bad news and it makes you feel bad. But did you know, I uncovered during that research that in one particular area, things have actually been getting a lot better in terms of healthcare outcomes in America over the past few years. And I want to talk about it. It has to do with cancer. A drop in overall cancer mortality rates is pretty amazing. So as of 2015, the cancer death rate for men and women combined had fallen 26% from its peak about three decades ago. This decline translates to nearly 2.4 million deaths that were averted over this time period. That is crazy. If you had asked me, so I have lost family members to cancer. I mean, the vast majority of people have because it's so damn common.
Same.
Same for you as well. I assumed it was literally getting worse every year. Because you hear about so many people getting cancer, and obviously you hear about a lot of terminal cancer cases as well. But it has apparently been getting better, like 2% better each year, at least in recent years. The rate of new cancer diagnoses has decreased by about 2% per year in men, stayed about the same in women. And so overall, the number of diagnoses is going down slowly. The number of deaths overall has been dropping, thankfully. This is very good news. It seems like the sort of thing that we should know is going on.
Yes, and we should take a moment to say good and thank you. And thank you to the medical community and thank you so much to the people who have donated to certain cancer charities that increase their ability to do research and discovery of new treatments and new approaches. On the Happy Half Hour, we've covered, so my dad died of pancreatic cancer. We covered a story of a 13-year-old who invented an entirely new way to scan for that.
Really?
So that, or essentially to scan for where the pancreas is, because believe it or not, it's difficult to find because it's so nestled. They call it an angry organ. It essentially is nestled between so deep inside the body that when you apply the radiation treatment, they frequently miss by a number of millimeters, but you're destroying the healthy tissue around the unhealthy tissue. And a 13-year-old, as a result of a science initiative that was looking to give away a scholarship for someone with the best science program or science project, he discovered and invented a new way to treat it.
That's awesome. Let's talk about some of the specific numbers. More good news. Well, this isn't. Tobacco remains by far the leading cause of cancer deaths today, responsible for nearly 3 in 10, even up to now. I mean, we've known obviously for a long time that's horrendous for you and it kills a lot of people. I think it's like 26% of all cancer deaths are still lung cancer for men and for women. But lung cancer death rates declined 45% from 1990 to 3 years ago. That's 19% from 2002 to 2015 among women. So that's great. The most dangerous kind, at least in terms of the number of people that it kills, going down a lot. Breast cancer death rates declined 39% from 1989 to 2015. They're saying that early detection in that case is working. And also people knowing that they're supposed to be getting tested for this, that awareness is very important as well. Prostate cancer death rates declined 52% from the early 90s to 2015. Colorectal cancer death rates amongst women declined 52% from 1970 to 2015. So all of these really bad kinds of cancer, thankfully, huge drops in how many people are actually dying from them. There's a little bit of good news in terms of the racial gap in cancer death rates as well, which still exists, but the 2015 mortality rate was 14% higher in blacks for cancer than white, compared with a peak of 33% in 1993. So part of that has to do with expansion of Medicare, Medicaid, those sorts of things. And one of the ways that that manifests is that the gap is much smaller the older the people are. So older white people, older black people have a smaller gap in their mortality rates. Younger people, when it goes to preventative care and detection that you have to have health insurance and probably kind of good health insurance to be scanned for that, the gaps are a lot wider. Mm-hmm. So this is more evidence, by the way, that maybe universal healthcare would be pretty damn awesome.
Right, specifically because with the age disparity issue, Medicare is for older people.
Yeah.
and they have the kind of care that we should have for everybody.
Exactly. So you already see that if we had that system, you know, throughout the different age categories, we might see the same effects where we don't have as much inequality racially on the outcomes from cancer. But overall, the big point, very good stuff happening with cancer. That sounds terrible to say, but things are getting better, at least in terms of number of diagnoses, numbers of deaths, as more detection, prevention, treatment, and all of that is being developed.
And go get scanned, go do that.
I need to do that.
I'll do it right after the show, John.
Thank you. Okay. Well, check into a few of those. Mm-hmm. Anyway, thank you for watching the show. I do want to say, I know TYT members, thankfully, they're seeing these streams now. So if you are watching as a member, thank you for watching. If you're not a member, but you're seeing this, you can become a member by going to tyt.com/John and signing John and signing up to be a member. Brett, thank you, not for that comment, but for being on the show. And thank you for watching. We will see you next Monday. Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.